Welcome to the Mach 1 Market Moment Podcast with the team at Mach 1 Financial Group. The Mach 1 Market Moment Podcast starts now.
Hello and welcome. It is the Mach 1 Market Moment Podcast. I'm John Stillman. He's David Lee. What's happening, brother?
Hey, John. I'm good. How are you?
Doing great. Good to talk with you. And special edition today where we go to the request line and we answer some of your questions. If you have a question for David and the team, best thing you can do is head over to the website, which is mach-1financial.com. So that's Mach, which is M-A-C-H, Mach-1 or Mach-1, the number one, financial.com. It's kind of a mouthful when you actually say the website, but you're a pilot, right? That's where that comes
from.
That's
right. That's the background. I was an F-16 pilot for a number of years, hence the name Mach 1. Mach 1 is the speed of sound, for those of you who don't know.
And how many times have you reached Mach 1 in a plane?
I don't know. A lot.
Yeah? So it's a regular occurrence when you're flying an
More
F-16.
More than 10, yes.
Okay. How many people did you blow up from your F-16?
Fortunately, I never had to blow anyone up. I was really fortunate. I was, even though I was active duty post 9/11,
yeah.
The sister squadron on base, I was stationed at Cannon Air Force Base in New Mexico when I was active duty, and the sister squadron on base got sent to Afghanistan because they had laser targeting pods, and we had the oldest F-16s, my unit, the 522 fighter squadron, we had the oldest F-16s in the active duty Air Force at that time, so we didn't have the capability to drop smart bombs. So anytime President Bush would go to Crawford Ranch when he was president at that time, our squadron would have to go over to Crawford and we would patrol. We would do what's called a combat air patrol over the ranch. So we would just literally spend hours and hours just flying in a circle several thousand feet above the ranch. And then we'd just every now and then, every hour or so, we'd go up, hit the tanker, get a little bit of gas, come back down, fly around for another hour or two, and we'd do that for like 4 or 6 hours at a time and then fly back to New Mexico. So that was kind of the most action that I got during those years. But I loved it. I had always wanted to be a fighter pilot from the time I was a kid, and I'm thankful I got to do it for about, I flew fighters and fighter type aircraft for about 12 years on active duty.
I don't know why I've never asked you this, but how did you go from flying F-16s to being a financial advisor?
Well, that's an interesting story. I'm married and I've got two kids. And at the time I had about a 5-year-old girl and a 1-year-old boy. And I, even though I was doing my dream job, you know, I was doing what I always wanted to do from the time I was a kid, I was working all the time and we were gone quite a bit, to various locations, Alaska, Denmark, Las Vegas. I know it sounds like a hard life, but we were gone a lot. And you know how it is. If you have kids of your own, you want to be with your family, or at least I did. And so I was never seeing them grow up and always gone before they would get up in the morning, home after they had gone to bed for the night. And I'm looking at the colonels and generals that I'm supposed to aspire to become like, and they're doing the same thing, and except they're much older than I am. And I just said, you know, there's got to be a better way than this. And so we prayed a lot about it and made a decision, my wife and I together, to leave the Air Force, not knowing exactly how it was all going to unfold, but believing that God would provide. And I got picked up for an Air National Guard slot in my hometown of Fort Smith. I was an F-16 instructor pilot at the time, so, and they flew F-16s down there at the time. So it was just a natural fit. So I continued flying part-time as a traditional weekend warrior, as they say, for the Fort Smith Guard unit there out of Fort Smith, Arkansas. But, you know, I was making about 25% of what I was making on active duty because I was just a traditional weekend warrior. So I knew I had to do something else to pay the bills. And long story short, I had always thought for about a year before I left active duty, I had a lot of time to think and pray, knowing that I was going to be leaving. And so I just thought, well, what would I enjoy doing? And because I had an entrepreneurial father and he had owned his own business, and he always taught me to, you know, don't do something for the money. Do it because you love it. Because if you do what you love, you'll never work a day in your life, and you'll work hard enough to be successful at whatever you do if you love what you do. So I'd always been interested in, I'd always been pretty good with numbers and math, and I'd always just kind of enjoyed managing my own stocks in the market and things like that. And so I thought, well, you know, maybe financial, maybe that's what I want to do. And so I started interviewing with New York Life after I, like within a week after I left active duty, I started interviewing with firms like New York Life. And my parents' financial advisor, a guy by the name of Chuck Beal, got wind of what I was doing. He said, oh, he's making a bad, he told my parents, he said, he's making a bad mistake. Have him come talk to me. And so I did. And he interviewed me and hired me that on that first interview and started mentoring me and training me. And so I had the benefit of learning from someone who had been in the business for 40 years at the time. He's since retired and just had a great mentor. He had a satellite office up here in Bella Vista, Arkansas. His main office was in Hot Springs Village, Arkansas. And so after training with him, I basically took over the satellite office up there in Bella Vista with no employees and a little 700 square foot office, and just grew from there, just organically, as they say, starting in 2005. We opened up that little office in Bella Vista in September 2005. And just grew steadily year after year after year. Those first years were excruciatingly difficult, but God always provided. We always had enough. We never missed a meal. We always had enough income to pay the bills. And now we've grown so much to the point where we've got over $100 million under management when you include the annuity side of our business. And we've got, I think, 8 employees, including part-time and full-time. We've got a 4,000-square-foot office here on Main Street, Walton Boulevard in Bentonville. So the Lord's been good. It's been a long journey the last 12 years, but we've grown a lot through the years. And I would have never, to answer your question, John, I would have never envisioned myself doing this. I really thought that I would either become a full-time Air National Guard pilot, retire from that after 20 years, and then go on to be an airline pilot. That's kind of what I thought, but God had other plans. When I sat down with Chuck and interviewed with him, and he showed me, you know, what the potential was and how this all worked, I saw that, hey, if I work hard at this, I can set my own hours. I can work with people I want to work with. I can, you know, there's no limit to the income potential if I'm willing to work hard, and I can help people simultaneously. And so anyway, that's a very long answer to your question, but that's how I got from being a fighter pilot to where I am today.
Good to know. Like I said, can't believe in the 6 years that I've known you that I've never asked you that before.
Yeah.
But, that's interesting. So, well, enough with my questions. Let's answer some questions from the folks. What do you say?
Yeah.
We'll start with Tom, who's in Bentonville. Tom says, we're considering putting an addition on our home. Is it better to use a home equity line to fund this, or should I withdraw money from my 401k?
My advice, Tom, would be to use the home equity line or some other means of traditional financing rather than pulling money out of your 401k. And that's because you run into what's called the double taxation trap if you borrow funds from your 401k. So if you're under 59 and a half, you can borrow funds from your 401k, but you have to pay it back with after-tax dollars. So you end up paying tax twice on it, essentially. So you definitely want to do that. And even if you're over 59 and a half and you can withdraw funds without early withdrawal penalty, you still, in my opinion, want to use traditional financing, because you figure, you know, especially in today's interest rate environment, you could probably get a loan like that for 3.5% to maybe 4%. Whereas if you take a withdrawal out of your 401k to build a house or whatever, you're talking about a 20, 25, 30% federal tax rate, and then add another 5 or so on top of that for state. So it's much more expensive. So I would recommend, you know, kind of going the traditional route with financing.
All right, let's take another question from, this one's from Bella Vista, where Catherine writes in and says, for decades, I've had laddered CDs so that I have one maturing every single year, but with interest rates so low, I'm wondering if I have too much money in the bank, how much is too much? Also, maybe you wanted to ask this question 12 years ago.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Catherine, kind of like we've talked about in some of the recent podcasts, good rule of thumb is 6 months of living expenses in cash on hand for the inevitable emergencies of life that will pop up. If you keep a lot more than that on in cash in hand, cash on hand, or even in CDs, you're being inefficient with your money because interest rates are so low, as you know, you're just not earning any interest on it. So to answer your question, how much would be too much money in the bank? My view would be if you got significantly more than 6 months of living expenses, then that's too much and you need to take that surplus and invest it for in the market or in fixed annuities or indexed annuities for better growth.
Absolutely. So good question, Catherine. Definitely better options for that money. How about Susan? Susan is in Rogers and says, I've always heard people talk about the importance of life insurance, but I never fully grasped the importance of it until my husband died unexpectedly last month at the age of 61, and I got a check for $250,000 almost immediately. It's comforting to know the money is there, but I don't know what to do with it. What do you suggest? Yikes. A lot of emotion probably in that situation.
Yeah. First of all, Susan, I feel empathy for you with your husband dying unexpectedly. 61's a young age to die these days. So, but with the, as far as the $250,000, the great news is you won't pay tax on that. In case you didn't already know that, that's a tax-free, all life insurance proceeds are tax-free. So you won't owe a dime of tax on that $250,000 check. Now, as far as what to do with that, what do I suggest? I'd suggest that, you come in and talk to me or some other investment advisor that you trust, make sure they have a fiduciary duty. And again, what it really boils down to is how much do you need to live on each month? So let's say you need $5,000 a month to live. And let's say that your future Social Security income is going to be $2,000 a month. So you have an income gap of $3,000 a month. So we would say, what kind of rate of return do we need $250,000 to make? If this is all the assets that you had, $3,000 a month is $36,000 a year divided by $250,000 is going to be more than 10% a year. So we would have to have a fairly aggressive investment portfolio if that's all the investments you have to try to make it last for your life expectancy. So I would put together a portfolio for you using a combination of indexed annuities for safety, hedged equity strategies for upside potential, liquidity and downside protection, high probability options for the aggressive growth that's not correlated to the market, and what we call a tactical investment strategy that has some sort of math-defined trigger at which it'll get out of the market and go to cash if the market starts going down too much. When you put all those together without, in the time limit that we have on this podcast, I don't have time to explain all the intricacies of how that all works together and why the pros and cons of each of those investment vehicles offset the negatives of the other ones. But suffice to say that mix of investment vehicles, in my experience, gives the best probability of what I call a market neutral portfolio, which means a portfolio that is highly likely to generate a positive rate of return, whether the market is up, down, or sideways. So I would just recommend, Susan, that you call us, set an appointment with me. Let me show you. I'll take time to do a thorough retirement analysis to figure out what your income needs are going to be, and then come up with a plan that's going to have a high probability to make sure that money lasts you for the rest of your life.
Again, if you'd like to get in touch with the team at Mach 1 Financial Group, get your questions answered. You might have questions that are in a similar vein to some of these, or maybe you have a completely different question that you'd like to discuss. Just give them a call. 479-876-2100 is the number. That's 479-876-2100. No cost or obligation if you'd like to come in for a visit. They can help you get that set up. 479-876-2100. Is the number to call. David, thanks as always.
Enjoyed it, John.
Talk to you soon, right here next time on the Mach 1 Market Moment Podcast.
Investment advisory services are offered through Coppell Advisory Solutions, LLC, doing business as Fusion Capital Management, an SEC-registered investment advisor. The firm only transacts business in states where it is properly registered or is excluded or exempted from registration requirements. SEC registration is not an endorsement of the firm by the Commission and does not mean that the advisor has attained a specific level of skill or ability.